Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Monday. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. It's hour number two. Chris Chapman, what are we going to do?
Sticks down, drop the puck on hour number two of the VGK Insider Show.
Okay, so part of me wants to talk about this Linus Ullmark trade, but not because of the trade. And here, I'm going to rant for just a moment, and then we're going to get into burning questions for Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. Puck drop on that's probably coming at you in about 20 minutes or so, give or take. It's plenty of time for Alanis Morissette to really settle into the national anthem, whether it be the Canadian, the American, or both of them. We'll get to that a little bit later on as well. But, okay, here's my rant when it comes to the Linus Ullmark trade. It broke 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago, whatever it is. And in that time, in searching for it, in trying to put all the pieces together and getting everything ready to go for one-timers just a little bit later on, I have come across on social the sentiment of Gary Bettman is not going to be happy that this trade broke now, or that this trade happened now. And the only thing that I'm going to say is this. The draft is on Friday. Here in Las Vegas at the Sphere, which is going to be really fun and really awesome, and I'm super excited, and I cannot wait for that to happen. But the draft is going to be Friday and Saturday here in Las Vegas at the Sphere. Okay, there's a lot of movement that happens at the draft. There's a lot of preparation that goes into the draft. That's on Friday. Free agency in the National Hockey League opens a week from today. A week from today. So you're talking about 7 days' time. You're going to get the draft. You're going to get development camp. You're going to get free agency. You've got to come to terms on what you're going to do and what you're going to attack and what you want your team outlook to be going into July 1st. And you've got a week to do it. Why? Because the Stanley Cup Final is going down to the wire June 24th. If you're mad, like, truly, if Gary Bettman's upset or mad or frustrated or bothered by the fact that two teams that have nothing to do with the hockey that's being played right now, whose season ended, in the case of Ottawa, a long, long, long time ago, and in the case of Boston, a long time ago, you can't be upset that they made this trade 4 days before the draft when you're playing on June 24th. You just can't. You can't. If you're upset about that, you shouldn't be playing on June 24th as Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. You just shouldn't be doing it. You shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, teams have to take care of their business. You know, they have to keep their houses in order. Yeah. And, you know, there was the reporter who asked Paul Maurice a couple days ago, and Paul said, oh, I'm getting paid fine. They're feeding us nine times a day, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I played some Weird Al after that. But think about it. Training camp for these guys started in mid-September. We are now in late June. They have played through all four seasons because June 24th is now, what are we, three, 4 days into summer? Mm-hmm. I cannot imagine how hot and humid and just yucky it is in Sunrise, Florida tonight. Like, listen, I've got family in Florida. I've been down there in the summer. It is not fun. It's awful. And if you're Gary Bettman, the idea that you have now, I don't know if they're the first professional sport to ever do it, play in all four seasons in the same season, but it's a rarity, that's for sure, because the NFL certainly doesn't do it. To me, hockey is a winter sport. They should not be finishing at the end of June. I mean, July 4th is less than 2 weeks away. We're going to be blowing stuff up in a couple of days. And here we are, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup. No, if you're Gary Bettman, you cannot be mad that teams are taking care of what they need to take care of a few days before the draft. We don't know if the Bruins are going to turn around and make another move. We don't know if Ottawa is going to go trade something else away to acquire assets for this draft. Teams have to do what they have to do. So you know what? Too bad. Too bad, Gary. If you're mad about this, too bad. It's you and your yeah. league's fault that this is happening.
I'll be honest. It's more TV than anything else. But I want there to be a trade that breaks in like the middle of the second period tonight.
Oh my God! Can you imagine how great that would be?
Like, listen, I'm not saying that it's going to be a Mitch Marner trade or anything like that, but if there's a Mitch Marner trade that breaks in the middle of the game tonight, that'd be the funniest thing.
You know what would be even better? If it was one of the two teams that are playing tonight made a trade
in the second period.
We have a trade to
announce. They're not going to get anything. whichever team wins tonight is not going to get anything done until the draft. Right?
Listen,
like, there's a 0% chance.
If you're a free agent that the Edmonton Oilers or Florida Panthers are looking, I think the team that loses tonight too. I mean, if you're Edmonton mm-hmm. and you lose tonight, you got to get back on a plane and fly all the way to Edmonton, probably tomorrow morning, losing that Stanley Cup Game 7. Then in a day, like, think about it. I was talking to one of our people here, Doug, and we were talking mm-hmm. about if the Oilers lose tonight, do you think Connor McDavid is going to be in a good mood when he comes to Vegas for the NHL awards? He may not even come. He's going to win the Hart Trophy. He may not even show up.
He's going to win the Hart and the Conn Smythe, and he's not going to show up. Absolutely. 100%. Now, think about it from the other side. Like, let's just say, for the sake of argument, the Edmonton Oilers win tonight. The Edmonton Oilers are going to have 3 days with the Stanley Cup before a couple of them are going to have to go to Vegas, which is never a bad thing.
Yeah.
But they're going to come to Vegas, and they're going to have to relinquish this championship that they have had for all of 3 days, so that it can be on display at various times around town here. Like, you don't get that, and this is the biggest issue. And it's ridiculous, I know, but it's the biggest issue with the fact that the Stanley Cup final goes so late in comparison to the rest of the schedule, and that the schedule around it hasn't changed. Like, this wouldn't be a problem if the draft was pushed back to, like, July 5th. This wouldn't be a problem if free agency opened on July 15th instead of July 1st. But none of those things have changed. The only thing that has changed is the date for the Stanley Cup final has been pushed back. And when everything else remains the same, that period of time becomes condensed. The Golden Knights had, like, 10 days straight of just absolutely living it up in Vegas with the Stanley Cup before the NHL awards and the draft and all of the things that you're obligated to do when it comes to being champions and showing up for events. The Oilers or the Panthers are going to have 3 days. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're doing a disservice to these teams by taking, because you don't have an opportunity to make that time up. You know, like, mm-hmm. if you're Edmonton and you win, when is your parade? Next week? Tuesday, Wednesday, the middle of next week. I mean, it's crazy, because you know they're not having it this weekend because their brass is going to be down here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see the logistics of all of that. Okay, so let's dig into burning questions, Game 7, Stanley Cup Final. Like, I've got a couple that I think are worth getting to here as – you know, warm-ups have already taken place. Both teams ready to go. Puck drop in just about 10, 15 minutes or so. The first one for me is really simple, and it really does dive into Stuart Skinner and what he's been able to do in games 4 through 7 in every series throughout this postseason run. As you mentioned, 10-0, 1.40 goals against average, .943 save percentage. Like, can he do it again? Like, can Stuart Skinner be unbeatable in the hardest part of the series? And if he can, then that changes the perception of Stuart Skinner forever. It's not a one-time thing. It's not just an in-this-moment scenario, and it's not a one-trick pony either. Like, the ability to go on a heater for 3 months, 2 months, whatever it is, that can stick with somebody over the course of time, right? But when you're looking at this from a different perspective, the fact that he got better in every series as it got deeper and deeper, and that when the stakes were higher, he played better and better, that is the makeup of the player. That is the mental fortitude coming to the forefront. That is a guy that's just kind of built a little bit different. And if he can close this out, and he can be 11-0 in those moments in a series that determine winners and losers, it changes the perception of Stuart Skinner for the rest of his career.
Yeah, no disagreement for me on that one. You know, it's a bit like it did for Aiden Hill, right? Like, a lot of people no longer look at him as a guy who was the backup in Arizona and San Jose. He is a Stanley Cup champion goalie, and he was a goalie who played very, very good in the Stanley Cup final last year. My burning question is, will Florida ever lead in this series again? Like, they have not led in the series since Game 3. Since the final whistle of Game 3, they have not led in this series. And they haven't even really pushed to take a lead at any point in this series. They once they have gone behind, they've not even been able to really make a game of it. So my burning question is, can this Panthers team score an early goal? Because I think if they're going to win this game, they're not coming from behind to do it. They're going to need to get out and play with a lead, and they're going to need to play their brand of hockey, what they did in Game 1 and 2 and Game 3, at least the first half of Game 3, the second half of Game 5. They need to be able to play their game, and in order to do that, they need to have a lead. I just don't see a situation where if this team falls behind one or two goals, they have the ability to come back, because – you know it's Game 7, so your chances on the power play are going to be extremely limited to begin with. Secondly, you ain't scoring on the power play. So forget that. Like, not only are you not going to have any chances, but maybe the one or two chances you do have, you ain't scoring on them anyway. So I think if you're Florida, you have to get the lead. The other thing is, you can't give up any power play goals. Like, you have to be perfect tonight in special teams on the kill. Because I think if you fall behind, if you give up a power play goal, it puts you in a really, really tough spot. So for the Florida Panthers, my burning question is, will they ever lead again in this series? I don't think so.
So for Florida, in my estimation, it comes down to, can Sergei Bobrovsky steal a game, right? Because, you know, you look at this series and you look at how things have gone for Bobrovsky from Game 4 on, it's not been pretty. The numbers aren't there. However, I think the only way Florida wins this game is if Sergei Bobrovsky can steal them one. The only way Florida can win the Stanley Cup is if Bobrovsky keeps Edmonton to two or less. I firmly believe that. Like, if Edmonton scores more than two goals, I don't know what the path looks like for Florida, simply because they haven't scored. To your point on the power play, it's non-existent. It's not going to happen. So if you're in that spot where you've got to get to three and you've got to keep your opponent to two or less, you need your goaltender to shine, because I'm expecting a fired up Connor McDavid. I am expecting the best version of Leon Draisaitl. I am expecting the Edmonton Oilers to push the same way that they have over the last three games. And if that's the case, there's going to be scoring chances, there's going to be breakaways, and you need your goaltender to steal you one. You know, and the question that I have now going into this game is, can he do it? Which is crazy given the context of what Bobrovsky has done over the course of these playoffs. Like, he has had some of the best saves, some of the most brilliant saves, individual saves, in every single series that he has played. And yet, here I am, going into Game 7, wondering whether or not he can steal you a game. That's how good the Oilers have been over the last three, and how bad Bob has been on the same on the other side of the coin. I don't know if he can do it.
Yeah, it's going to take a Herculean effort from him and everyone else to do so. You know, my burning question here is about Connor McDavid. So he's got 40 points in these playoffs, which is
42,
which is fourth all time, trailing Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and Wayne Gretzky. Gretzky has the record, which, by the way, Gretzky had 47 points in 18 games in 1984-85.
Not bad.
But my burning question is, how close will Connor McDavid get to Wayne Gretzky's record of 47? I don't think he can. I don't see a scenario where he has 5 points tonight. But would you put it past him, where he
no.
where he has 5 points in a game seven to win the Stanley Cup? But my question is, at the end of the night, will he rank second all-time on this list for most points in a Stanley Cup playoff season? Because 42, I mean, you went through it the other day with how many players from the Maple Leafs, or how many points players from the Maple Leafs have had for their career, and McDavid has already eclipsed some of them. By the way, 34 assists. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at either. That's the record.
Playoff record.
You know, so, I mean, this is a guy who has made a name, obviously being the best player in the world. He could really put a stamp on that tonight. So the question is, how close is he going to get to that record of 47? Because, Ryan, I think when we do this show tomorrow, we're talking about a scenario where Connor McDavid has passed Mario Lemieux for second on that all-time list for playoff points in a single season.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him to just get 5 or 6 points tonight. Like, not so much in my scenario of how I think the game is going to play out, but if you're confident that it's going to be a rout by Edmonton, then I would expect a big-time performance from McDavid.
Well, the other aspect of this is, if it's a two-goal game in the third period with 4 or 5 minutes to go, how much time of an empty net are the Oilers going to have to shoot at for Connor McDavid to maybe add some points to that total? Because you have to imagine he's going to be out there in that scenario. So if it's a 1 or 2 goal game late in the third, there's going to be some time where Bobrovsky is not in net, and the Oilers are going to have a lot of time with an empty net. So something to keep an eye on for me, for sure.
Okay, so here's a question that I've been wrestling with for a while now. And when I say a while, I mean off and on since the conclusion of Game 6. Will the weight of playing for the Stanley Cup ruin the Edmonton Oilers? And I say that because for the first time in this series, the Oilers have something tangible to lose. For the first time in this series, the Oilers have an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup, but at the same time, it goes away. Put another way, said a different way, this is the opportunity for the Oilers to win. And it's very different when you have a chance to win the cup versus trying not to lose the cup, if that makes sense. It's very different to play free because you just want another day, because you just want to get to the next game, because you just want to extend your season by one more. You want to just see if you can have this comeback, if you can make this comeback. The pressure, it's not there. It seems ridiculous, but it's the truth. It's not there because nobody, as we've gone through before, no one expected the Edmonton Oilers to push to this spot and legitimately give themselves a chance to win the Stanley Cup. But now they legitimately have it. It's in front of them, and they've only got one chance. They've only got one opportunity. You're not playing to try to get here. You're playing for the championship. You're not playing to extend the season by one more game. There's no tomorrow. And so I wonder if that pressure, if understanding at the end of this game, you have the chance to lift the Stanley Cup. I wonder if that gets to Edmonton in a very real way, like it has the Florida Panthers. Because the Florida Panthers have been tight. The Florida Panthers have been timid ever since they had a chance to win the Stanley Cup. And so my big question in this game, the biggest question that I have really when it comes to this game, is does that shift in mindset for Edmonton, understanding that they can actually win the thing tonight, does that ruin what they've had going for them over the last three games?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because now there actually is pressure, whereas previously there was no pressure. So we'll see. Look, it's no secret that tonight Connor McDavid will become the first Edmonton Oiler player since Bill Ranford in 1989-90 to win the Conn Smythe Trophy. The question is, by how, and I've tried to find the information. I cannot find it. But will he be the player who has the largest margin in the history of Conn Smythe voting to win that trophy? Because I don't think it's even close as far as anyone who has the ability to win that trophy. It's his, win or lose. They could lose 8-0 tonight, and he's going to win the Conn Smythe trophy. I don't think there's really any debate about that. But I've wanted to try to find the information. I couldn't find it, what the largest margin of Conn Smythe winner to the guy who finished second was. But if that information is public, and I don't ever remember seeing like the vote totals last year. I don't vote, so I don't know if like that's something that's even out there. But I think that this will be the largest margin. Now, we may never know, but it'll be the largest margin from first to second in the history of Conn Smythe voting. And so big, in fact, I don't even think there's going to be – I can't even tell you who will finish second. Like, is it going to be Stuart Skinner? Is it going to be Zach Hyman? Because I think Edmonton – I think they go 1-2-3. Like, I don't even think Florida has anyone in the top three of voting for this Conn Smythe. That's how one-sided I think this is. But how big of the margin – for Connor McDavid to win this Conn Smythe, how big is it going to be? I hope we find out, because it's going to be absolute. I think it's going to be eye-popping how great the margin is. So my burning question is, by what margin will Connor McDavid win the Conn Smythe, and will it be the largest ever?
I think it'll be incredibly unanimous. I really do. Oh, Roberto Luongo banging the drum for Florida. There you go. That's how you get Game 7 going. Roberto Luongo, it's not like he's ever had a bad experience in a Game 7.
Boy, they're really bringing out all the they're bringing out the voodoo doll of themselves tonight.
a Game 7 of a Stanley Cup final where his team had a 3-2 series lead.
Or not only that, but he wasn't even the goalie for your team when he played in that Game 7. He was playing for a team all the way across the continent.
Not great. Okay, last burning question for me comes down to the Florida Panthers giving their fans a reason to believe. And we talked about this a little bit earlier on in the show, but nothing, and I mean nothing, has gone right for the Florida Panthers. You just mentioned it, Chapman. They haven't had a lead since the conclusion of Game 3 in this series. So you need to give your fans a fan base that over the course of this team's existence has suffered through being the butt of everyone's jokes, has suffered through the laughter about attendance, and has had to watch the Tampa Bay Lightning continue to have success, and all the question marks and all the losing and all the tough times. You have had to endure that as a fan. And so when that happens, when you go to a Stanley Cup final early and lose, and then you don't get back, you don't get back, you don't get back, you finally get back last year, and it just feels like everyone was injured and the series was over before it even started, and you went up against the Vegas Golden Knights, who were an absolute wagon, you wonder if you're ever going to get back there, number one. And number two, will it be different? Will it change? And it looked through three games that it was actually going to be different, that there was going to be change. And then the Panthers do what the Panthers do. And this fan base, I firmly, firmly believe, doesn't think the Panthers are going to win tonight. I think this fan base is in a position where they just accept, they are resigned to the idea that the Edmonton Oilers are going to be the second team ever to come back from a 3-0 deficit in the Stanley Cup final to win the Stanley Cup. And the only way you're going to get the building on fire, the only way you are going to get your fan base to believe that that outcome can be different, is if you give them something to cheer for and something to believe in early. It can be a big save from Sergei Bobrovsky. It can be a great goal from Matthew Tkachuk or Sasha Barkov. It could be dominant performance, power play. I don't care what it is, but you need something in the first 10 minutes of this game to really give your fans something to hold on to, because without it, I think that that building gets really tense. I think that that building goes really quiet, and I think that that favors the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, that's a good one. And you know, the Panthers right now, their fans, they're that guy who had way too much to drink at the party, and he wakes up the next morning in the fetal position because he's had too much to drink. And the Oilers fan base is the guy poking him with the stick, like, come on, get up, wake up, guy. I'm not going to touch you, so I'm poking you with the stick, wake up. But that leads me to my last observation, or great question, or burning question. I should, boy, butcher that. My next or last burning question, and this is more so for the Golden Knights fan base, because I enjoy banter on social media. I enjoy the trash talk. And for a year, the Golden Knights have had bragging rights over the Edmonton Oilers in this rivalry. But my question for Golden Knight fans is, how insufferable are Edmonton Oilers fans going to be if they complete this comeback and win a Stanley Cup? Because this, honestly, will give them the trump card. It gives them the ace in the hole. Like, hey, not only did we win the Stanley Cup, but we did something that hasn't been done since 1942. There's only one, apparently only one player alive from that series, and he's 101 years old. So that tells you how long ago it was that something like this happened in the NHL and a championship series to nonetheless. But how insufferable is this Edmonton fan base going to be if they end up winning this cup tonight? Because for Golden Knight fans, they have been giving it out to everyone, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. I would.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
But the tables are about to turn, and my question for them is, are they going to be able to handle it? And how insufferable are Edmonton fans going to be if this does come to fruition tonight? Because I imagine social media, especially from Alberta, maybe not so much Calgary. In fact, they're going to get it as well, maybe more so than Golden Knight fans. But the banter and the trash talk is going to be ramped up a notch. So the next year is going to be fun watching that develop on social media.
Okay, so here are two things that the Golden Knights fans can just clap back with. One, we beat you. Vegas beat Edmonton en route to their Stanley Cup, so there's that. And number two, the Vegas Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup without ever facing elimination. So you want to talk trump cards. If the Edmonton Oilers end up winning the Stanley Cup this year, they did not beat the Golden Knights in their path to the Stanley Cup. So there was no series between the two teams. It's not like Edmonton beat Vegas outright to continue their season. And number two, the Golden Knights were dominant last year in the postseason. One of the most dominant runs through the playoffs that we've seen in a long, long time. They never faced elimination once. Edmonton, they faced elimination six times. So including the fact that the Golden Knights finished off the Panthers in five games and the Edmonton Oilers had to come back from a 3-0 deficit. So I think that there's a lot of different ways, if you're a Golden Knights fan, where you can just kind of say, hey, I'm real happy for you, but like, let's pump the brakes on this idea that you're somehow better because of it was a harder road for you. It was hard because you made it hard.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. But, I mean, okay. It's going to be fun. That's for sure.
Well, the Florida Panthers had an early power play. Warren Fogle got the stick up on Brandon Montour. There's about 11 seconds left in the power play, and wouldn't you know it, the Edmonton Oilers have had a couple of good looks shorthanded, and the Florida Panthers have had a whole lot of nothing in the direction of Stuart Skinner. We'll take a break. Come back with one-timers next on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for One-Timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League, brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
One-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. We talked a little bit about the big trade in the NHL today. Nothing else going on, not a Game 7 or anything. The Ottawa Senators get Linus Ullmark in exchange to Boston for the 25th overall pick in this year's draft. Jonas Korpisalo at 25% retained salary. And center iceman Mark Kastelic. So it's Ottawa gets Linus Ullmark. Boston gets the 25th overall pick. Jonas Korpisalo 25% retained. And Mark Kastelic, no extension for Linus Ullmark. Mark Kastelic is a bottom six, fourth line center iceman. Had 10 points this year for the Boston Bruins, 5 goals, 5 assists. He's got 14 career goals and 25 career points and 144 career games, 25-year-old center iceman. I understand it for Ottawa. I really do. Linus Ullmark's a really good goalie. The Ottawa Senators need to take a step. We've been hearing about how they're going to take a step for years now, and it hasn't happened. And a big reason why they haven't been able to take a step is simply because their goaltending has not been good enough. Defensively, they are still a young team that's trying to grow and take the next step. So it makes a lot of sense that Linus Ullmark is their guy. Now, from the Boston side of things, I understand the draft pick. I understand Jonas Korpisalo. Like, you want to maintain a tandem as best you can. I would imagine that Korpisalo will do better in Boston than he did in Ottawa, because the Boston Bruins just simply defend better than the Ottawa Senators do. I would have expected maybe a bigger name coming back the other way, especially when we talk about the Boston Bruins and their need for more elite talent down the middle. But on the whole, like, for the Bruins, you move on from Ullmark. It's not exactly the return that I expected it would be, but at the end of the day, it's still a first-round pick, a player, and a goaltender. It's fine. Not great, fine for Boston. A really good move for Ottawa.
Yeah, I think so. And look, I think for Boston, Korpisalo is, I think he's going to be a solid backup to Swayman. So, I mean, he's a guy who I think has shown glimpses of being good at times, but he's never really been in a good situation. So this is really, I think, I mean, outside of a short stint with the Kings, this is really the first opportunity he's going to have playing for a playoff team. So I think for him, he's got to be thrilled. He gets out of Ottawa, goes to a contender, and there's not any pressure on him because he's going to be the backup. But for Ottawa, this was a move that I think kind of materialized. We hadn't heard a lot of chatter about them being involved in this trade. I think a lot of people felt that Ullmark was going to be moved. We just didn't really know where. But I think for the Senators, it's a good get. They didn't really give up a ton to get it. My favorite little fact about this trade is that the Bruins get back the pick that was originally their draft pick, which they traded to Detroit way back in the Tyler Bertuzzi trade. And then Detroit made that trade to Ottawa in the Dominic Kubalik and Alex DeBrincat deal, and Ottawa acquired that pick. So now, long way around, it goes back to the Bruins. So fun stuff.
All right, cool. Let's go to let's go to Toronto Maple Leafs, I guess.
Yeah, buddy.
You know, so last week, you know, we talked about a report from Paul Bissonnette where he was kind of floating around the idea that the Toronto Maple Leafs might extend Mitch Marner, to which I got, like, rightfully so, angry at the idea that Toronto would even consider that. Well, today, Frank Saravalli kind of poured cold water on that idea, saying that he doesn't expect that that's the direction that the Leafs are trying to go, and that, you know, they're going to do everything within their power to try to make something happen. Like, I don't know how you can make something happen with a guy that's got a full no move. And I'll say this because it popped up the other day with Barclay Gaudreau. And I don't know if you've, like, heard kind of the rumblings surrounding Barclay Gaudreau and how the waiver situation landed him in San Jose, but Barclay Gaudreau had a no trade clause, not a no move clause, and I believe the workaround to getting him to San Jose wasn't so much trading him there, because you couldn't do it because San Jose was on his no trade list. You put him on waivers. That's a move, not a trade, and that team can claim him, and they did. And so with Mitch Marner, like, you can't move him at all. You can't put him on waivers. You can't do anything to impact change in this scenario. If Mitch Marner wants to play his final year out as a Toronto Maple Leaf and walk in free agency, that's his right to do. I don't know why you do that, though, if you're the player. For a number of reasons. Because there are certainly things that the team can do to make life more difficult and that can impact what your next contract's going to look like. Okay, Mitch, you don't want to help us help you get a really good spot? You're going to be on the second power play. Or you're not going to be on the power play at all. Or we're going to put you on the third line, or we're going to limit your minutes on the penalty kill, or whatever the case may be. There are things the team can do that could hurt the player moving forward beyond just this season. So if I'm Mitch Marner in this spot, and of course we don't know exactly what's happening. We don't know the conversations that have been had between Marner, his representation, Bradtree leaving. Like, we don't know any of that. But the simple fact is this. If the Toronto Maple Leafs don't want Mitch Marner, if I'm Mitch Marner, I'm picking my spot. I don't care how bad of a trade it ends up being for Toronto. I am picking my spot. I am getting my extension. I am making my bank. And I'm putting myself in the best possible scenario because I don't need this.
Let me ask you this. Could you see any scenario whatsoever where Mitch Marner plays in Vegas next year?
No.
Okay.
I shouldn't say no, because I would have said the exact same thing about Jack Eichel. And then, I, to be honest, I think I did say the exact same thing about Jack Eichel. I think a week before the trade, I'm like, "Dad, no, there's no way." And then it happened. So if there's a way to make it work, and it makes sense for the hockey team moving forward, like, sure. But right now, I don't see it.
So,
I don't see it mainly because of
the salary,
where the Golden Knights are at right now with the salary cap.
Hypothetically, Jonathan Marchessault does not re-sign with the Golden Knights. Then could you see?
I don't want
to
do this.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to do this.
All right.
I don't want to do this. Listen, if there's a way to make it happen, and it's determined that that will make this team better,
it's going to.
Then I think it can get done. But the fact of the matter is, like, none of it matters. Like, the teams don't matter. The individuals don't matter outside of Mitch Marner. If Marner's like, "I'm not doing this. I'm not waiving my no move," he's not going anywhere. He's just not.
Yeah. I see you. Yep, I see that.
Okay. The Winnipeg Jets are likely to trade top prospect Rutger McGroarty. The Jets made a run at signing him to an entry-level contract after the 2023-24 NCAA season, but the player decided to go back to Michigan for another year. The sticking point reportedly is that the Jets couldn't promise a path to NHL playing time. McGroarty was drafted 14th overall in 2022. It seems more and more likely, just kind of based on the reports that are out there today, that this trade is going to happen sooner than later, I would imagine this week, given just some of the things that I was looking into. And I guess the question that I have in this scenario is very simple. If you've got a guy that you want to sign that you believe from a development perspective is not going to get any better by going back to college, but you're not yet committed to putting him in the NHL in those situations, then I don't know that I'm coming down hard on the player here. Like, we all know that going back to college is probably not the best thing for his development. And I'm not even saying guaranteed playing time in the National Hockey League, but map the plan out. Spend half a year in the AHL, and then from there, okay, we're going to start working you in this situation. By the end of the year, you'll be an everyday player. Like, you can do that, I suppose, but that's the sticking point, and it's unfortunate because it's going to cost Winnipeg a really good young player.
Yeah, maybe the kid kind of sees the writing on the wall. I mean, I think if you're the Jets, you're... I don't know how you draft a kid without a plan for him to get to the league. How you draft a kid that high without a plan for him to get to the league. Like I don't think that's a very common thing. And it's one of those things where you look at the kid and maybe he just doesn't want to play in Winnipeg. Like maybe there's an ulterior motive here. And I don't see a path to the league is just an excuse, because I can't see a scenario where this kid who is drafted 14th overall doesn't have a path to the NHL, especially for Winnipeg. So my guess is maybe there's something else going on here. I mean, he didn't tell the Jets, don't draft me, like we saw with the kid from Philadelphia. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. And, yeah, it sucks for the Jets because they're not going to get a first-round pick for this kid. I don't know what they're going to get.
No.
But they're going to take a loss, a big loss. And it sucks. It's a wasted draft pick is what it is.
It's 1-1 in the Stanley Cup Final, Game 7. Carter Verhaeghe opened the scoring for the Panthers. And then almost immediately, the Edmonton Oilers answered a goal from Matias Janmark on a breakaway. So 1-1, about 6 minutes or so left.
I don't know what.
Those are your one-timers for today.
On that play.
Yeah. Those are your one-timers for today, Monday, June 24th. Catching up with Chapman is next.
That was one-timers. One-timers. Brought to you by Paul Pata Law. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery. When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
All right, Ryan. So a couple nights ago, or I guess a couple days ago when we did the show, I made the comment that if the Oilers came back to win the series, I would buy an Edmonton Oilers jersey. So I guess it's kind of fitting that Matias Janmark is the guy who scored for Edmonton because I decided if I do have to suck it up and buy one, that's the jersey I'm going to get, because he's the only one to me that's even stomachable on that team. And he is. I mean, but I felt bad that he was like the one guy, one of the few guys that have played for the Golden Knights that I never really had a chance to talk to, because he played during the weirdest time probably in our lifetimes, and we never really had locker room access. So I'm going to walk around with a Matias Janmark jersey, despite the fact that I never really got to know Matias when he was playing here. But let's hope it doesn't come to fruition and the Panthers will save me and my $300 and I won't have to go buy an orange Edmonton Oilers Matias Janmark jersey. The only other saving grace is if they sell out, and then I'm off the hook.
You're not going to be off the hook.
No, I know.
You're not going to be off the hook. You'll just buy one next year. Game 7. Enjoy it, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow.